guest today is Jeff Strauss. Jeff, how are you, sir?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Enjoying Code Mesh?
Love Code Mesh.
Me too. Let's talk about JavaScript.
Okay.
What are you doing with JavaScript these days?
We use it. Obviously, everybody's using JavaScript pretty extensively these days, it seems like.
Everybody is anybody.
Mm-hmm. Well, or something. It's funny because my background as a .NET developer, I've always spent so much time over the last several years. I was always thinking, a lot of C#, a lot of Razor, MVC kind of stuff. And I did very server-side stuff. But then using Razor and using template engines to, a little bit of jQuery. But I wasn't really doing distinct client-side development. Right, that was really truly separated from the server, and
was that because JavaScript sucks?
No, JavaScript doesn't suck. Well, sometimes you know what? Sometimes JavaScript sucks.
Sometimes.
A lot of times it sucks.
You know, the joke is that there's a book called
right,
JavaScript.
The good parts.
This thick, and mm-hmm. JavaScript, the good parts is this
right.
thick.
Right. Well, and parts of it are horrible. Lots of it is horrible. It's getting better. It's getting easier to use.
It is getting better. The rate at which it's getting better is accelerating.
Right. Well, the release cycle now, and that's happening with a lot of things. You see it, inside Microsoft too, with faster release cycle,
sure.
newer features coming to market more quickly. It's kind of what the developer community demands.
Yep. It's more agile.
Right. And so you're seeing that with JavaScript too. What's changed for us about a year and a half ago when I joined up, Jay Harris, obviously, and when he and I joined up with our company. The practices he was already using were much more distinct client and server development, and I've learned a lot and kind of changed a lot about the way I think about application development over the last year and a half. And a lot of what we do is we separate the client completely. And so part of the way I approach, because we're consulting, right? We're a consulting firm,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of the way that we approach an application is
Aranasoft.
Aranasoft, right.
Aranasoft.
Arana Software. So the way we approach client development, right, with our clients is that we think about user experience very heavily. Even though we're not a design shop, we have partners and friends we work with for the art and the design. We're not designers.
It's not so much to make it look pretty, but to make it usable.
To make it usable and make it functional. And so we focus very heavily on client-side development and client-side development first, because we want to make sure that we focus on the place where the human touches the machine.
Okay.
Right? If the human doesn't like playing with the machine, it doesn't matter how awesome your code is, how awesome your database is, and how efficient it is. No one cares. If they don't like using your software, they're not going to use it.
Okay.
So we focus a lot on getting the client built first. We'll actually mock up like a node server. We'll use Express.js, mock up a node server with mock API endpoints, mm-hmm. and focus entirely on building the markup, building the JavaScript. We're an Angular shop most of the time. And so we'll build our Angular applications out, and we'll just hit we'll hit these mock endpoints and not worry about anything that's really happening on the server until our client, capital C client as opposed to web client, has seen it, reviewed it, works with us to make sure they like the way the application looks and feels more than a wireframe.
Right.
And then after that, we turn around and say, okay, now that we think we're happy, we'll start building the server-side stuff. And by keeping everything really distinct, by keeping our client-side development focused on JavaScript and making RESTful calls and focusing on our markup without ever looking at any C# code, any database schema, we're a lot more able to adjust quickly.
You know, it's funny you say that. This is a right turn of the conversation I expected us to have. But this was a journey that I took.
Mm-hmm.
When I first started writing software, I started with databases. I was
mm-hmm.
a FoxPro guy. FoxPro is real database-centric.
Right.
And I learned databases and relational databases and SQL. And so when I started building interior applications, I built them the same way. I'd start with a database, and then I'd build a data access layer. And sometimes I'd build stored procedures,
right.
and then data access layers, and then maybe a business logic layer, and then the UI. And one day, what changed my mind is I was working with a team of two, and I said, I'm going to build the back end, you build the front end. And I did that. I built a bunch of tables create, read, update, delete things, maybe get by ID, get all, stuff like that. And I said, okay, it's done. And he said, great, I'm just about ready with this one screen. How do I call get customer by zip code? And I said, oh, I haven't got that one. Let me write that. And I went and wrote them all. And then he said, okay, now how do I call get customer by state or something like that.
Right.
And the, all the stuff that he was looking for, I hadn't written. And all the stuff that I had written, he wasn't looking for. Not all, but a lot of it. I had wasted a lot of time.
Waste a lot of time.
On the wrong stuff. And this is what you're talking about.
This is exactly why we do it.
The reasons why people do test-driven development, because the test is the front end.
Right.
And it tells you what to call on the back.
Right. It makes a huge difference for us because, and waste of time is just it. You know, as engineers, and obviously, you know, my original background isn't necessarily in engineering, but...
It's in law, isn't it?
It's in law, right. And, but... Law and consulting, it's all kind of the same thing.
Is it?
In some respects, it is. Okay. We're solving problems. My medium is code now instead of words and contracts.
One right turn. We should...
We'll stay.
That might be a good topic for a different show.
Yeah, we'll do that. So back to the idea of...
Let's talk about JavaScript. I want to talk about JavaScript. Because you're actually... you're evolving as JavaScript evolves. You're learning the new... We don't even call it JavaScript anymore.
ECMAScript. So ECMAScript is a spec, right? ECMAScript is the standard.
Yes.
JavaScript is the language. JavaScript is an implementation of ECMAScript.
Okay.
Right. So, but I make that, you know, I make that distinction. So I'm giving a talk the very last session on the last day of CodeMash. So everyone's either going to be worn out or waiting to win prizes in the ballroom or just gone home. So I don't know if anyone's coming to the talk, but I'm giving a talk.
If there's a blizzard, they'll go home.
If there's, that's right. I'm giving a talk on ES6 tomorrow afternoon, and I start out that way. I kind of say, all right, we're going to distinguish ECMAScript from JavaScript. And then I kind of make everyone sort of looks at me and they think I'm being ridiculous. And I even accept, I'm splitting hairs a little bit because while there are other implementations of the ECMAScript standard, the ActionScript, no one's doing that anymore.
JavaScript is, that's right.
But I split the hairs because I want people to realize there's a lot of frameworks and a lot of new things. There's things like TypeScript. Years back, CoffeeScript was very popular. There's other languages and things that sit on top of JavaScript. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people come in and they hear ES6 is another new thing, and they think, oh, it's another new thing. Great, I got to learn this too. But it's ES6, ES Next, whatever comes, you know, whatever versions come beyond, that's not the same thing as TypeScript, right? Because it's just an evolution of the existing standard. So the reason it's not so much, I don't ever refer to myself as using ECMAScript, or even ES6. I write applications with JavaScript. Mm-hmm. It just so happens that ES6 is a version of JavaScript. And so, what I'm enjoying seeing is there's been a major shift to make JavaScript more usable, more approachable, to make some of the patterns cleaner, to make code cleaner, by adding some simple features, some more complex features to the specification. So the talk tomorrow is just that, I'm going to talk about how, like I told you earlier before we started the discussion, is I treat this as like a comparative, right? It's a comparative talk. So I'll come up and I say, okay, so great. Who knows about scope? Who enjoys scope in JavaScript? And usually one or two hands. I say, okay, well, that's great. I'm not talking to you guys anymore. But most people, they think about scope or this as a keyword in JavaScript, and they cringe, they freak out.
It changes.
It changes, exactly.
That's why the famous that equals this.
That equals this, or var self equals this, or dot bind this, or any of these other ways that you can handle holding on to what you want.
What this was at a particular time.
Right. And so I kind of raise the – I'll get people to raise their hand and say, does anyone like this? And I was like, no. Say, okay, well, so, and we look – and so a lot of the talk is I try to teach ES6 by showing – JavaScript pre-ES6. I'll say, okay, here's this thing. Let's look at how it worked. Let's look at what it did. Let's talk about why, you know, you see things like IFEs. And a lot of people who are truly JavaScript developers, I think, have a fairly good understanding of how JavaScript, fairly good, of how it works under the covers. But a lot of people who come to JavaScript because they're C# developers who now need JavaScript, or they're Java developers who now also need JavaScript, don't necessarily understand the fundamental differences about the way the language works. And so I try to talk about how here's why they did this, but look at this new feature. Look at this arrow function. Look at this, right? The way that
what does the arrow function do?
With an arrow function in JavaScript,
yeah,
right. So an arrow function is sort of a new way of kind of almost like a shorthand way of declaring a function, but it's also it keeps your reference to this, right? So think about a callback, right? Think about in a simple world, like a simple example I use is you want to have a function that's going to say greet somebody. So it says, hey, I'm going to say hello to you in 3 seconds. I'm going to say hello to Jeff in 3 seconds, and I have like an object that has this.name equals Jeff. And then I have set a timeout, and in 3 seconds say, hello, this dot name. By the time the 3 seconds come out, the execution context has changed. And this is now my window, my app, whatever. And this doesn't have a name anymore, or at least its name isn't Jeff, if it has a name at all. So what the arrow function does, instead of having to use a that equals this or a bind this, it allows you to hold on to your reference so that it's lexical. They call lexical binding. So I enjoy that. I enjoy kind of, because you give a talk like that, and it's sort of, you see eyes kind of pop open, and you see people get excited, because it's the things about JavaScript they really didn't like, and it's been changing quite a bit. It is sort of interesting, too, because I get more and more I'm hearing conversations about things like TypeScript.
Right? Yeah.
And, you know, with me, and I don't know, I'm actually like to hear what you think about TypeScript, because you probably have...
I'm a fan. I
right,
love TypeScript.
Right. So...
Well, part of the reason, I should say, part of the reason that TypeScript is so popular is because it fills in the gaps of ES6 stuff for browsers that don't yet support ES6.
Right. Right, that's
which
true.
Which means that it becomes obsolete over time.
It might, right.
At least those features of it do.
Those features do. So you're using it, so you like it because of the sort of, because by the time it gets transpiled down or compiled down to JavaScript, it solves those problems. But so
that's one of the reasons.
So right, so because Babel does that, right? Babel does that with the ES6.
Sure, Babel does, and the CoffeeScript does that as well.
Exactly, right. So the reason I asked is because I think it's an interesting discussion. I get a lot of pushback, including with mutual friends of ours, who we talk about TypeScript a lot, and I have trouble. You know, I see it in Angular too, and I see the value, but I sometimes wonder about the long-term viability of using TypeScript to build applications when, like you said, it becomes obsolete, right? What if it becomes obsolete in 2-3 years from now? The reason I get so excited about ES6 is because ES6 is just JavaScript,
right?
And so I do wonder a lot, and I'm kind of curious your take on it, because I like hearing other people's opinions, and I like being told I'm wrong. I always kind of give this pushback against TypeScript because I feel, okay, great, I can learn TypeScript, and I can turn TypeScript into, I can use it to get around some of the problems you have. I know it has typing, which I don't get excited about because, to me, I'm used to JavaScript not being strongly typed. I'm used to it being dynamic language. I'm okay with that. But I wonder... If I'm consulting with a team of the client and I say, okay, you're going to build this thing, you're going to use TypeScript, and 2 or 3 years from now, TypeScript may stick around a long time. It's got a lot of legs with it, especially because of its relationship with Angular. But just like CoffeeScript, if it's the hot thing right now, but 2 years from now, 3 years from now, some other new hot thing has come along. Hmm. ES6 is still JavaScript. If you built your application on JavaScript and you've trained your team on JavaScript, you're going to have no trouble finding people who know JavaScript to maintain the software to continue going to run the team. What do you do if TypeScript becomes less relevant and you still want to maintain an existing application 2-3 years from now and you have to find talent? Does that make sense? Do you not think that's a problem?
So that's a challenge. That challenge happens with any language. I mean, what if, especially languages that are relatively new.
Mm-hmm.
So you could pick... Here's a better example. Okay. What about all the JavaScript frameworks that exist? They're coming out very, very rapidly.
Right, absolutely.
We have even, that's even worse of a problem. So
that's
if
true.
We pick Ember a few years ago, there was nothing wrong with picking Ember. It was awesome. It solved a problem. It was very popular. And these days, it's much less popular than it was a few years ago. People picked Ember today. People say, wow, that's so 2013.
Right, it's so old.
And which is a long time in the JavaScript world. Why aren't you doing React? Or why aren't you doing Angular 2? Or Relia is coming up. Why aren't you looking at that? So the JavaScript world, we're used to that.
That's true.
We use tools that solve a problem today. And I won't say we totally ignore the future on that, but that shouldn't be the number one consideration. We should be solving this problem because these tools are going to move really rapidly. But even the same thing happens in, you know, C# isn't going to be around forever. Ruby and Python won't
be around. It's not going to be around forever, but their life cycle and their durability has been much longer. JavaScript's life cycle is a lot longer. That's what I'm saying. There's a durability. I'm not worried about the death of .NET, right? I mean, not really. No matter what some people want to say.
It does change.
It ebbs and
flows.
JavaScript changes. Sure.
So the syntax will change.
Sure, the syntax changes.
And in fact, a lot of the syntax that's in TypeScript is mirroring the syntax in the ES6 because the TypeScript team is looking at the proposals for ES6.
Yeah.
And trying to bring the syntax, you know, just
more, and more in line.
Yeah, just bring it ahead a couple of years or a few months or whatever it is.
Right, right. Yeah, it's a...
That was a long answer, but I
no, I wanted. That's why. That's what I was looking for, because I'd like to hear the counter argument.
I don't think it's a killer reason. TypeScript is a great tool. It increases productivity, and you have to ask yourself: is that going to, is that increased productivity going to be offset by, you know, this lock-in, risk of this lock-in with this technology that may not be relevant in 5 years?
Right. Perhaps that's a good answer. Good answer. I mean, I just enjoy having the discussion only because and part of me is, you know, I don't know. I feel like maybe I've just gotten crusty, like curmudgeonly, get off my lawn sort of way, right? But where I think, okay, but there's this thing and it works just fine for me. And sometimes I wonder if I'm just not the audience for TypeScript, right? Like different tools have a different audience. I think that I could find a way to use it. I certainly could benefit from it.
Well, also strong typing, which is a big deal.
It is, but I also have my talk on modern web dev workflows, I really do usually get some angry stares from people. Some people get really excited, and some people get angry about it. Where I have the slide about C sharping all the things, right? And I love C sharp. But sometimes we C sharp all the things, right? We have TypeScript because it's C sharp's JavaScript, right? Mm-hmm. We have you have things like the Entity Framework and Hibernate because it's C sharp SQL. We have we have Razor to C sharp some of our HTML and our templates, and so we do that because it's where we're comfortable. And I think that there is a place for that. So what I see that value, saying something like TypeScript allows people who are already comfortable in a certain way of thinking, to have familiar paradigms, to have something familiar, to have the strong typing that they're already used to working with. I don't feel that way when I use JavaScript, which means I almost feel like it's limiting for me, but it'll evolve. I'm sure you'll ask me this 6 months later. I'm going to say, TypeScript is the greatest. It's the most wonderful thing. You know, so. But it comes and goes. Things come and go.
All right, what were we talking about?
I don't know.
ES6.
We were talking about ES6. Various features of ES6.
What's your favorite feature?
My favorite feature.
Was it one that you were waiting for? You were thinking, man,
this is JavaScript,
until ES6 came along.
Well, so I've never. So I like the flexibility with scope, and I like
how did scope change in ES6?
So like think of something like let, right? We're talking about something like declaring variables with let.
Okay, and what is let?
For example, right, where let is a way of among other things, block scoping our variables instead of function scoping our variables, right? Okay. So JavaScript, many people probably already know, historically will function scope a variable. You declare something and you think, oh, well, I'm used to C sharp, and so I have an if block, and I have a little curly brace. I declare a variable. Well, it's not scoped to that block, right? It's scoped to the function. So
with the word let,
we are scoping it to a block. And const, let and const, right? So we have that. I think that's great because it's one of those things where I forget all the time, right? It's easy for me to, I declared a variable and I thought it was out of scope, and I screw something up, and sometimes debugging JavaScript is unpleasant. And so I like those features. The feature I think is really cool, although I don't use it as much as I could, is I like destructuring a lot. I think that it's kind of fun. I think it's a neat concept. Right, where destructuring you're familiar with, right, where you take you can have a pattern as like your L value, right? So you take an array pattern, you take an object literal pattern on the left hand of your assignment operator, pass an object or an array in, and you can deconstruct the thing and take pieces out. Kind of, I haven't worked with tuples too much yet in the C# stuff, but similar kind of idea where we can take pieces out and put them into individual variables, break the thing down. So I like that. I've used it for some patterns for finding new ways to return data out of a function. Mm-hmm. So I use destructuring to say, return multiple values, because I can return an object that I can then grab and destructure out of function and not have to call multiple functions or have a lot of overloaded functions to get more than one piece of data out of it. So I use that, not as much as I probably could, but I really like it when it comes in. It's a little, feels much more different than some of the new features in ES6. Mm. It's something that really there was nothing like before. So my favorite? I don't know. It's kind of funny to say, what's your favorite feature? But I enjoy it. I like it a lot. Some stuff I'm not as crazy about. Like see, now here you're going to understand where I'm coming from. A TypeScript, like class. I don't like JavaScript class.
Why?
I think it's confusing. I think it can be misleading. So I have this. So I have a soapbox about it. Where I don't think. Sometimes I think maybe I wouldn't mind class in ES6 if they had just called it something else.
Like prototype.
Like prototype or thing. I don't care, but something other than class. I think it's misleading because it's not really a class, right? Just somebody who's excited to see classes. So in talking to people about JavaScript all the time, when people do come up and say, I'm really excited, in my talk, I don't talk about class at all. And they come up afterwards, it's like, I'm really surprised that you didn't cover classes. I said, well, first of all, if we're really going to cover class in JavaScript, that's half the talk, right? We're going to spend a lot of time on it. I can't get through that. That's not a five-minute topic. And I want to get through as many bite-sized features as I can in an hour. But also, the people who are excited about them, when I ask them, tend to be people who are newer to JavaScript, who have a very strong background in object-oriented and classical inheritance models like C#. And that's just not what JavaScript is, right? I mean, JavaScript is just not... That's not how inheritance works, right? And just because we have a class keyword, if you look and ever pass it through Babel, or I imagine if you pass something through the transpiler for TypeScript, and look what gets spit out, it's not what people think it is, right? You still have prototypal inheritance. JavaScript is still JavaScript, and since they haven't changed the inheritance model, I think classes are misleading. We don't use them at all. We went down that path for a while. We started using them when we first started putting ES6 into our applications, and we ripped it all back out. Ripped it all back out. So I don't like them at all.
You're doing a lot of speaking, aren't you?
These days, yes. Only one talk at CodeMesh.
What's next for you?
The first thing up in the year, although I don't think the call is open yet. Last year, early in the year, I did Grand Rapids, which is late winter, early spring. So I'll go up and hopefully be able to speak there again.
Oh, yeah. I think I heard that they might be changing the name of that.
I heard that, too.
I've forgotten what it was.
I think it's like Beer City now. It's like Beer City Code or Beer City Conference, something like that. I was talking to Woody about that, and they're changing the name. I went up there for the first time last year. I had a good time. Yeah, obviously, Jay being based in Michigan, I'm up in Michigan a fair bit, so it's nice to be up there in that community. So that's what's up next. I've got a user group thing locally in St. Louis. It's an interactive interactive developers user group. It's a meetup. So I'm going to be giving a talk there. They're working out their venue because their current place is under construction. And once they get it, I'm going to be speaking there. And then usually spring, I'm waiting for calls to open. Typically, I end up going to Louisville in the spring. And we have Adam Barney does his conferences. Now they're growing with Amigala, right? It used to just be Nebraska Code, but now Adam is expanding. He's going to have one this year, I think, in Detroit, Indianapolis. He started Prairie Code last year in Des Moines. So I'll hopefully get to do a couple of those this year. And, of course, KCDC, although we moved KCDC, we've moved it to August. So it used to be in the spring, and we're moving it to August this year.
I hope to see you at some of those.
I hope to see you as well.
Jeff, thanks so much.
Hey friends, I know this the segment here at the end of the show. I'm sure a lot of times it can be humorous or funny. I want to say something a little more serious here today. A lot of people may already know I'm here at CodeMesh with Dave and a very dear friend of the technology community. Had a terrible tragedy while we were up here. Jim Holmes, who is a good friend of mine and a longtime dear friend of Giard's as well, and many people here, had a horrible tragedy with his family. So if you've ever been touched in the technology community by a conference, by a speaker, by people, especially here around the Midwest. He's since moved to Oregon, but if you've ever been involved in the community and have found someone who's mentored you, there's a good chance that you can trace that back in some fashion to the work that Jim has done. He has a very wide reach, and his butterfly effect is tremendous. So if you know Jim, be thinking of him. I'm going to try this without crying, but I guess I'm all done now because I'm going to lose it. Thank you. Thanks. We love you, Jim.